Have you made an honest review? Jump onto fifthwrist.com and read real takes by real owners about their watches. And of course, get involved and write about what's on your wrist. Fifthwrist.com is your independent space to talk watches.
Welcome to the Independent Thinking Show for Fifth Wrist Radio. This is a place dedicated to showcasing the great people doing interesting things in the world of horology. My name is Roman, and today for a change, I'm flying solo, but I do have a very cool guest with us, and I can't wait to get into the conversation with him. Joining me is a watchmaker from the metropolis of Saskatoon in Canada. He's pretty new on the scene, relatively so, at least with his new release, but I'm sure there's a long story behind him, and we'll dig into that. So welcome to the show, Aaron Sarauer. Aaron, how are you doing?
Great, Roman. Really nice to speak to you finally.
Absolutely. We've been trying to line that up for a little while. Now, question number one, I probably should have checked before we started rolling. Did I get your last name right? I'm sure I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's said many different ways, so.
Give me the tradition. Give me the correct way.
I just say Sarauer.
Sarauer, okay. Cool. My tongue doesn't roll the Canadian way, but that's cool. Whatever it is, it's awesome. It's awesome to meet you. Is that we've been having this we've been trying to get this conversation set up for a little while. And now that you've got your watch out into the world, this is like a perfect kind of thing, the stars lined up. So it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. So much to talk about. Let's do a quick, the way we kick these off, we'll do a wrist check. We'll do a drink check if you're drinking something. We'll do a location check. I might have spoiled that, but let's do that anyway. You go first. Why don't you? You're the star.
All right. Well, wrist check. I am wearing my new prototype piece here.
Nice.
The 119C, I've dubbed it, with the SH1 movement. And yeah, I'm loving that.
There you go.
I don't normally wear watches, so
yeah.
I feel like I'm wearing this one a little bit more than...
Sure.
Than I used to, but and then for a drink check, I've got a gin and tonic.
Oh.
It's an Empress gin out of Victoria, BC. And then I guess you said location check, pretty much the middle of nowhere in Canada. Saskatoon, right. It's called.
Very cool. Well, all right, that's awesome. I mean, there's so much to talk to you about with your wrist check, obviously, and we'll get into that. That's very cool. You're like the, I can't even tell you what number, watchmaker I talked in the podcast who doesn't wear a watch. It's becoming a trend.
Yeah,
it's either I don't wear a watch at all or it's a G-Shock. That tends to be the two, right? There's no middle road. That's very cool. My wrist check, let me do a wrist check. So I've got my Paul Gerber Synchron watch on. So Paul Gerber's a watchmaker out of Zurich in Switzerland. Yeah. I've got a little, it's a Synchron for people who sort of know me. I've talked about this watch a lot. I'm a huge fan of Mr. Gerber. The main reason I pulled this watch out is I see you and Paul at the bookends of careers because Paul Gerber's literally just retired.
Yeah, I heard that.
And you are just kicking off, which I thought was actually quite a nice, whatever the, we'll usually insert a watchmaking pun, nice resonance about the careers or something. So that's very good. My location's in Melbourne. Yeah, I haven't traveled for a little while, but can't wait to get out. Drink check, nothing too exciting. We won't even bother with that. It's 10 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday,
which is
not
enough.
Really a thing. But in terms of locations, I sort of made a little joke about Saskatoon. Now, lest it be said that this podcast makes no effort into researching Rolex reference numbers or Grand Seiko model numbers, we do some research about Saskatoon. So, life of pie. Jan Martel comes from Saskatoon, right?
Yeah.
Now, I will try and also do a bit of music throughout the show with Joni Mitchell, Saskatoon,
Mitchell,
right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Finally, and I didn't know about this, but I was very excited. So I'm a Red Wings fan from way back.
Okay.
Mr. Gordie Howe.
Yes, you bet.
Red Wings.
I've actually been on the ice with Mr. Gordie Howe.
What are we doing talking about watches now? Let's do that story for the next 4 hours and we'll do watch it in episode two. Oh, that's very exciting. So I said, I'm a Red Wings fan from way back. So that made my day. Actually, I have to say, I'm like, what the? Anyway, because Saskatoon is not the, not the metropolis. I must confess, I had to look it up. It's about 300,000 people or so, but very cool. Very cool. Yeah. All right, so we've done something. There's no wrist check, but at least we did a little bit of trivia for people. Cool. All right. Very well. Look, I think probably a good place to start. Let's talk about you, essentially. Maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe your age, how you got into watches, and let's sort of follow your path.
Okay. Well, I mean, I grew up here in Saskatoon, so there wasn't a lot of watchmaking around me. So I guess I learned it organically just by picking up watches and enjoying it. And then I originally went into the trades, actually. So I started as an electrician. But then what actually happened was I found on a website for one of the brands that they had job applications for watchmakers. And we don't have any of those here. So I didn't even know of the job. Wow. So essentially I said, oh, you can become a watchmaker? That sounds extremely interesting.
Okay.
So then I started researching it and finding different schools that you could go to, and it snowballed from there.
Wow. Is there a local place you can learn watchmaking in Canada?
I don't think there was at the time.
Right.
I believe there was a school in Quebec, but I'm not much of a French speaker, so really didn't help me. But so then I essentially tried to apply for WoStep in Switzerland.
Right. Yeah.
And I took the entrance exam in 2007. But they only do every 2 years. So I ended up having to wait the entire 2 years and attended in 2009.
Right. Well, see, that's an interesting sort of thing. So, and look, we've had a few people who obviously graduated WoStep previously as guests on the podcast, and one of our kind of part of the crew, Michael Woods Watchmaking, he's a graduate as well, or he did some sort of training at WoStep. So you came in with zero experience. Like, how welcoming was that process from the Swiss end? You coming in from the other side of the world, essentially in Canada, was it pretty smooth, straightforward kind of thing?
Yeah, it was pretty smooth. I guess I had a lot of other experience in life that really helped me.
Okay.
And their kind of policy is that they don't want really young people straight out of like high school.
Right.
Because then they have a little bit more life experience and then...
Yeah. You know? Yeah, and I get that. Yeah, you're much more committed to that path if you've kicked around life for a bit.
Sure. So I had quite a bit of other life experience in the trades, which definitely applies to pretty much everything I do now. But I think that had a lot to do with like how I got in to the school. I mean, I was really from the middle of nowhere with no background in this. So
sure. And go in, because the classes, I'd imagine, are very small, right? It's like a dozen people
or
something?
It's only six.
Oh, it's only six. Half a dozen people, right?
Six every 2 years, so.
What was the mix of people in the class?
I think there was about three Asians and Netherlands and Czech Republic, I believe.
Right.
And then me.
Yes, and English is the common language,
I presume they teach.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, very interesting. It's so interesting because I think you're now the second person we've spoken to on the show who went through the electrical engineering thing. Like, I think we had Christian Lass on the show, and Christian went from like mobile phone industry, microelectronics, and then discovered watchmaking as a thing when that industry was shutting down in Denmark. That's really, I guess it's small, working with small things. Yeah. And if you've got that brain, which I'm very envious of, that works. Very cool.
I'm a DIYer at heart as well. So I typically prefer to learn everything and do everything that I can. So.
Oh, it's a perfect motto for like an independent watchmaker, right?
Like even the shop that I'm sitting in right now, I built it all myself.
Yeah, right. So. That's just so beyond my feeble capabilities. Like that alone would just cause a divorce and be like just mental spiraling out of control. Yeah. That's the perfect attitude. Alrighty. So you do WoStep in 2007, 2000 something. 2009, 2011. What happens after that? So you come out, you graduate.
Well, I of course enjoy a drink. So the Irish pub there in Neuchâtel with the school. Of course, I ended up meeting the McGonagalls.
Nice.
And so from there, they offered me a job and I went and worked with John in Ireland.
Amazing.
For about a year and a half.
Very cool.
it was one of the best experiences I could have had for my career at that point, obviously.
Magic.
Because it was just thrust right into the independent watchmaking, which Wallstep, the schooling, doesn't really push you in that direction.
Okay.
But I took it that direction. Right. It's more set up for the brands to pump out service watchmakers.
Yeah, of course.
Is
you're right.
The main goal of the school, I think. But
right.
But I tended way there. We had so much like tools and stuff there at the school that we could. We had so many opportunities to learn things that I just took it to the max level. So
right.
And then I figured, hey, I really want to do more of an independent watchmaker style thing where I could build my own stuff. So
right.
Going over to John and working with him was just amazing.
Yeah, wow. So John McGonigal, so were you working with him when he was setting up the Oilean?
No, it was way before that.
Way before that, right.
I don't know if you remember, do you know his pieces?
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember the thing. I can remember the bridge at the front with the two.
A 1 of 10, and it has a sapphire dial.
I can't remember the model. Yeah. I could picture in my head with that kind of two-pronged little bridge at the front.
Balance bridge. I was working with him on those, and then we also were putting together watches for Ulysse Nardin.
Okay.
And then also I ended up working on the Maître de Temps.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah,
three.
I remember that. Yep.
So that one I worked quite heavily on, which was nice. And I actually ended up going and working with Andreas Strehler.
I love him.
Because he was he designed the whole system where you push the button and the two numbers kind of move out to the side.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we ended up having to work on that to get it to work.
That's amazing. I mean, for a young watchmaker who's just graduated out, what an amazing kind of path into the industry to particularly learn with John and Andrea Strehler. Yeah. That's insane.
Exactly.
That's insane.
Pretty unique. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm lucky to be able to do that. So,
So that takes us to about 2015, 2016. I think I'm just trying to piece together
2014, I think.
Oh, wow. Gee, you cram a lot in. That was some crazy years there. Wow.
Yeah. And then I moved back home. I just wanted to do my own thing.
Right.
And so, but then I took a few years off and really decided what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I actually applied for a job at Arm & Strom.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And so in 2019, I was supposed to go move there and live there. And they weren't able to get me a work permit.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting.
Unfortunately. So what ended up, like, it's quite difficult for people not in Europe.
That's why I'm probing your journey, because I'm in Australia, which is the same sort of problem. So far away that people who want to do it, even who study and all that, it's the getting all the permits and actually moving. Like, that's a tricky bit, which we hear about a lot.
So then I almost decided, well, if I want to work in this industry, I almost have to just do it myself.
Yeah, wow.
Which I wanted to anyways. So it really just pushed me in that direction that I needed to be.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, and that's got you to now, you got set up your thing. So
then once COVID hit, I guess, I just started going full on into designing my own movement from the ground up.
Well, let's talk about that. Probably now is a good time as any. So let's talk about this. So you've got experience, you've worked with really complicated mechanisms, particularly that maître de temps with the sliding. I mean, that's really complicated kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then deciding to do your own, you went with a very classic time only. Was that you always wanted to do that anyway? Or was that kind of a thing that everyone tends to start with as a platform?
I feel like that's more my style is just simple.
Right.
But I suppose it was just an easier way to get into it.
Okay.
So I guess I didn't really mention, but when I was in Wostep, I made my own movement and caliber in the school.
Wow.
So that wasn't really part of the program, but I forced them to let me do it.
Okay.
And it turned out quite well, but it had a moon phase and a power reserve on it.
Yeah.
And so I could have tried to do that again, but I figured for the start, I wanted to just keep things simple and work on the hand finishing. Yeah. And that's basically where I took it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And do you think were the design elements, we'll talk about those in a second, were the design elements in your watch that you eventually launched, the 119C, if we put that next to your Wostep prototype, a cold piece, if you like, would we be able to trace a direct line?
I think you could tell some of it for sure. Okay. Like the seconds bridge and the escape wheel bridge are very similar.
Okay.
And so it was just a design I formed to my new liking.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I like having a design language that kind of fits. And
yeah, well, I mean, that's the bit that really fascinates me, is that kind of the evolution of a watchmaker's DNA is an overused term, but it's that kind of design aesthetic or something that they can carry from model to model or throughout their making career is really interesting, particularly if you operate within a relatively classic canon, not like Uhrwerk or something, Debethune, sort of something way out there. But if you're working within a relatively classic, let's say round case and that, and really in traditional hand finishing and all that, it's quite a trick in which not everyone gets to carry off of just actually carrying that little torch across and moving it. So yeah. Well done to you. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely wanted to, some things worked really well in that watch.
Yeah.
Design wise. And then some things maybe I wanted to get away from, like maybe it looked a little bit too much like another watch or.
Sure.
Because back then I was just a young student who obviously just admired all these other watches I had seen. And
sure.
Your design evolves over time. So.
Yeah, of course. And then it would be sad if it didn't, right? It would be sad if, like, if you nailed it at 25 or something, it's like, nah, that's perfect. I don't need to grow anymore. I'm the complete package. Very cool. So when you were going through that kind of thinking about kicking off your own brand or designing thing, are there people, and this is probably a generic question, like, are there people you look up to, or there inspirations that you carry, or are you pretty much like, yeah, I know what they've done, like, I'm doing my own thing?
Well, I mean, yeah, I would say working with John and the McGonagalls, I had a lot of inspiration and advice from them and learned a lot. And I look up to them, of course. But then it was also Keaton Myrick.
Yes, up in Oregon, yeah.
And I met him when I was in Ireland.
Oh, wow,
Just digitally at the time.
Yeah, gotcha, yeah.
But since then, I've gone down and visited him many times, and we became good friends, and he's an amazing watchmaker, doing it pretty much exactly what I want to do in North America on his own.
Yeah.
And so that's essentially a lot of the inspiration.
Yeah. No, I've never met Keaton, but have only heard good things. And like, he's very much just doing his thing quietly with kind of a fevered collector base behind it, which is really nice. And there is, like, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, there is a bit of a sort of renaissance or upswing in watchmaking, certainly in North America at the moment, but certainly in the US. There's a whole bunch of kind of cool people doing stuff. And starting to get little collaborations. Like, I think Keaton has worked, I think, with Josh Shapiro for some of his dial work as well. It's just very nice. And like, and there's clockmakers like David Walter doing stuff. It's just nice to see that kind of interest and ecosystem starting to develop. Like, I'm not sure whether that's being replicated in Canada. Like, I know I have a friend, Chris Manning at Silverhand, who is a sort of pen maker and a watchmaker now. I know he's starting to do stuff as well. It's just nice. But I don't know of any other. I think it's just you and him, as far as I know.
I think
in Canada,
there's one other as well on the West Coast.
Okay.
Brad Taylor.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no. And Brad, we've had on the show,
he's
of course.
Sorry. Starting to make his own stuff as well.
I think he was a model. Yeah, we actually had Brad on the show. Sorry. Thank you for reminding me. And I'm not even drinking. You're the one drinking the G&T, and I remember better.
Yeah.
But that's cool. And they're all young guys, which is nice. Like, that is.
Yeah.
future is bright. Yeah. Hopefully. All right. Well, look, tell the listeners who haven't seen, because you've just recently launched a watch. Maybe describe what it is to someone who hasn't seen it. Just tell us what it is.
Well, it's a three-hand manual wind movement. I've taken another movement and based mine off of the gear train of it.
Okay.
And which one is that? So it was the 6498.
Okay.
But I've essentially redesigned the entire geometry of the movement.
Right.
Because typically the 6498 is quite big of a movement. And so I wanted to get it into a smaller case. And so with that, I've kind of, because the parts in it are very geometry, like size specific.
Right.
It can't really go much smaller without moving things into spaces that they aren't normally meant to be, let's say. Right. So what I kind of ended up doing was making my hands, the hour and minute off center. But that kind of ended up being something I really enjoyed.
Right.
Like, okay. I liked the look of it.
Sure.
So it was almost like form follows function, or function follows form. Like, it all just melded together and worked good that way.
Okay.
And so, and then I guess for the rest of the watch, it's all German silver main plate and bridges. And then I've made my own balance wheel. I formed the overcoil from scratch hairspring.
Wow.
Redesign, like, all the, essentially everything in there has been redesigned.
Right. Yeah.
Because I just didn't want it to look anything like another watch.
Well, I think that's the tricky part, I think, for a lot of new makers starting out. That's exactly that thing of, you want to make it special, and you want to make it stand out from the crowd of particularly three-hand watches. It's probably I reckon a three-hander, like a time only, is the hardest watch to make. Because your set, the limitations are quite rigid. That's right. The limitations are quite hard, particularly if you go with quite a classical sort of display module, like time display thing.
I like that it kind of is, it's staying simple, but it's its own thing being off center like that.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Yeah. So now you went with that 35 mil diameter?
It's 35 mil movement. The case is 39.5.
Oh, perfect. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that's
by
actually cool.
10.8 high.
Yeah.
And 48 mil lug to lug.
Right. Okay. Wow. That's quite, that's actually like the best proportions. Well, I think the best, like 39 with a 49 is
what I felt as well. But I mean, everybody's different. So you get a lot of people saying, oh, I wish the case was bigger. Or
people always say that. Whatever diameter you make, right? Like, whatever size. Like, oh, if this was 1.5 mils, whatever, right?
Exactly.
So you don't make the case, though, right? So you get a source case.
I actually did make the
case. Oh, you do make the case. Well, okay.
So essentially the only parts I haven't made are the wheels and pinions of the gear train.
Yeah.
But everything else I make from scratch. So balance wheel, all the bridges, all the springs, the regulating. I mean, obviously I don't make hair springs, but
sure. Yet.
That would be quite impressive, but
well, you got to save something. Keep your powder dry for release number two.
Scare the Swiss, you know.
That's right. When you mine your own ore to smelt the metal. For the springs, for the thing you make. Okay.
The dial features some hand turned guilloche.
Yeah.
And that I've gotten Darren Tiffany.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, we've had Darren previous guest on the show.
So he does that part, but that's only one section of the dial. So it's essentially like a three part dial. So.
Yeah. I was going to ask you to tell us about the dial, because the dial, I love the dial.
It's essentially like three parts. So you've got the guilloche base, and then there's an insert where the hour minute track is, and then another section for the subdial seconds.
Yeah, I love the dial. Like, I mean, the dial is, and like, yeah. And the other thing is, I really like the logo, like the signature logo that you've got. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So I try to keep that a little bit simple, but
yeah,
it's there.
Yeah. No, it's really nice.
I ended up engraving it and it's paint filled.
Okay. I was going
Instead
to
ask. Instead of doing
you,
like a plaque or.
Yeah. Something.
Or pad printing.
It's, yeah.
It's the opposite.
Yeah. No, you get, like, I mean, looking at it, you can definitely feel the hands of the maker, like just looking at the watch sort of in from both sides, but just looking at the dial and then turning around, you can definitely see the hands of the maker in it, which you can't always tell. And look, I love a enamel dial, for example, but sometimes like it's just quite blank in a sense, like, if that makes sense. Whereas something of yours, you could definitely feel the presence of manufacturing with manufacturing being the root of hands,
manual, because it is like raw metal.
Yeah,
like everyone will be slightly different.
Yes, exactly.
They can't all be grained identically.
Yes, exactly.
And I would like to keep each piece a little bit different.
Right.
You know, the goal isn't to have 29 of the same.
Yeah.
Piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, so I was going to ask you about the 29 as well.
Yeah, yeah. I want to have different finishes. Us independent watchmakers, we have all these different skills. It would be silly not to
showcase them
in different ways.
Was there a particular reason for 29 as the first edition size?
Yes and no.
So let's go with yes.
I thought it was essentially a good amount.
Yeah.
However, most people choose a round number.
Is that right?
Well, I mean, just as in like a number of 10 or.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I know what you mean. Sorry, I misunderstood that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true.
It was based on a number I typically wear in hockey.
Right. Canadian, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you going to play today?
But I think it's a good sample size where I can test different amounts, like different finishes, different cases, case materials. And for this kind of like piece, I'm not going to be pumping out 10, 15 of these a year. So it will be a long series for me.
Yeah.
But I enjoy that. This is a series that could carry on a lot longer in my life.
Yeah. Well,
even if I do introduce something else in the meantime as well, this is always still there.
Right. Yeah. So it always right. I see. So now, at the moment, you're working on your own. Is that right? So it's just you and a workshop.
Yeah. Just myself. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm always find that really interesting. So, I mean, I would imagine each watch takes a considerate amount of number of hours to do, and you've got 29 of them going. So let's say, how many do you reckon you could make in a year, ballpark?
I'm hoping around 4 to 6 per year.
Right, what I find really interesting, and I guess you're the perfect person to ask, is if you're doing a series and you're doing your 4 to 5 to 6 a year, at some point, when do you find the time as a maker to think about your next piece if you're always making this piece? You know what I mean? Like the next model?
I get what you're saying. It's difficult, but you're always swirling about new ideas.
Right.
Like I would like to do a different case shape or something like that, because it's a little bit too much in a box to have just a round watch.
You know, yeah, okay. Like, yeah, I get you.
We're able to design these things. Why can't we do something different?
Sure. And I guess if you're making the movement, you're free from just using an existing blank, and then you have to conform to whatever that Bosch sort of locks you in. Yeah.
And I'm also, it's not like I've commissioned the 29, all 29 to make everything already.
Yes.
I may get to piece 10 or 12 and decide, hey, maybe I should add a complication to this.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that.
So you're not locked into it, right?
I'm not rigid in what each 20 of the 29 has to be.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's good. That's really good. I like an open mind. That's excellent. Sorry, just give me one second. Sorry about the noise.
worries.
Getting a bit, is it coming through your side?
I can't really hear anything anyway.
Oh, so. Good. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Maybe it's all in my head. it's definitely somebody here.
Yeah.
No, that's really interesting. I mean, the other thing I noticed on your website, and well, of course, we'll link your website up, is you've got a link like, I think you've got like, select your watch and enter a password, which I imagine means like if whoever's ordering a watch, you put like updates and stuff. That's such a cool feature.
Yeah.
I really like that.
A little bit more of a live updates kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you want to, and it's good there too, because if you have a few clients at the same time and you want, maybe one wants, like I might have different color of dials.
Yeah.
And maybe this guy wants a gold hand, gold seconds hand, and maybe this guy wants
something
this
else,
kind of numerals or something like that. Then it's at least all there and you can say, oh, what?
Yeah.
The collector can look and be like, oh, what did I actually want? Because, I mean, a lot of these watches take a long time, so you might forget what you wanted back when you originally ordered it.
Yeah, or your taste as somebody who's commissioning a watch sort of has evolved as you're waiting for these things.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I would imagine you as a maker, there's probably a limit to how many changes and
there's
only a limit at some point.
Like making changes, but it's at least good to have a record of.
You give people options. I totally get you. So in your series, what is actually customizable? So if somebody's listening to this now going, hey, I really like this watch, what's possible?
Well, okay. Right, so I don't really want it to be fully customizable.
Yes.
But it's silly not to work with people.
Of course, if they have
good ideas. So I suppose like, some options for patterns of guilloche, potentially, or like different materials of the applied numerals or the hands.
Yeah,
I also have like on the crown wheel.
Okay,
there's like a core to it.
Yes,
that's fixed from the underside of the barrel bridge.
Okay,
and so that has an option to potentially put some initials or something like that.
Okay.
And face of it, but again, I would like to stick to the same kind of design language I have.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have a good style. So
we have your style. It's not whether it's good or not. Like I happen to like it as well. Yeah, but like you have your style. So
exactly. I don't need to make like other people's designs.
Sure.
Essentially.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like to push it. Let's do a bit of a litmus test. What's a hard no? Like somebody goes, can you do this in, I don't know, Tiffany blue? Can you do a Tiffany blue dial or a salmon dial?
The fun thing about the Tiffany blue is my first ever watch I ever bought, it was just a fashion brand watch.
Sure.
But it had a baby blue on it.
Yeah, that's
not the Tiffany blue.
Sure.
But so I want to do that color.
Okay. So people can't see it because it's not a visual medium, but you're blushing right now. It's adorable.
Okay. So I didn't like that the Tiffany got so popular because
you have
like,
that color in your back pocket.
It's a nice color, it might get construed as I'm trying to do a Tiffany blue.
Well, yes, so, and that's which is a problem, right?
I would like to do. Yeah.
And we've got that on record now that you were into it before. You were into it before 5711 ever thought before it was a glint in whoever's eye it was. But. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I wouldn't say there's a lot of no's, but it's more, let's work together and decide if this is a good idea for my brand as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So you launched a watch not too long ago, but actually we should probably tell people the price as well, because they'll be wondering. What price would you land at?
I've set the price for the base configuration at $29,900 US.
Okay. Yep. And you launched that, was it? So we're recording this in April, so April 2023 for the timestamp. So when you launched it not too long ago, maybe 2 weeks ago? St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, so which is very close. What was the reaction? Like, because you launched on Instagram? The only platform? I don't know. That's the only platform I'm on, so I don't know if there's TikTok
or whatever. Yeah, I don't have any TikToks or anything like that either, so
okay,
I just went with the Instagram.
Yeah. What was the reaction? What sort of gut feel did
really
you get?
Really positive. Right. I had a lot of people message me.
That's really good. I mean, that's really good.
Comments about it. And the thing is, I feel I'm a little bit lesser known watchmaker being in the middle of nowhere, so I didn't have the hype.
Yeah,
a lot of other brands that I've seen out there.
Sure.
So,
well, I mean,
just kind of went with the cold launch, let's call it.
Yeah, I mean, I find that really interesting because once again, like one of the reasons I do this show is actually talk to people who actually genuinely make stuff that I have to admire. And most of them tend to be, not all of them, but a lot of them, like they start small and then they grow and mushroom and balloon up and all of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm in Australia, which is very far away as well. And we've got a local watchmaker here, Ruben Scoots. I don't know if Ruben,
but it's
the same. Like he's one guy in a garage and he's in the middle of, I mean, he's in Canberra, which is Australia's capital city, but it's also literally in the middle of nowhere. Like you wouldn't go unless you were a member of parliament. even then you try not to go there as much as possible. But you know, it's the same kind of problem. It's that you're not going to get people just driving past your atelier or whatever, strolling through the streets of Geneva or whatever. I can go, so
definitely not. It's tough to get any exposure here, of course, and nobody knows what watchmaking really is here, or at least this style of watchmaking.
Yeah, right.
So
is there a culture of kind of craft in Canada, whether it's leather goods, metalwork, knife making? Like, is there a community that appreciates that kind of high level handmade stuff, whatever that stuff might be?
I think so. It's just, you wouldn't see it as much here because it's a lot more blue collar.
Yeah. Here's in the area worker. That you're at, the area
in
that
Saskatoon.
You're
Saskatoon. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. And because the country's so big, there's definitely a larger community in Vancouver or Toronto and Montreal. But
sure.
But I'm so far from those places, it's difficult to.
Well, I mean, there is definitely precedent of cool, interesting watches coming out of Canada. I mean, like Halios is a brand I talk about a lot, and that's Canadian sort of stuff with Jason. So there's certainly a completely different price point, completely different sort of style of watch and maker. But so there's definitely a history of Canadian watches cracking through. So how do you find the challenge of finding customers or the challenge of finding people who are interested? Is Instagram a good platform? Is your website, because now you've just launched a website, is it the website? Like, what's the hook?
I think it is mostly Instagram.
Right.
To be honest.
Right.
You meet a lot of people on there and it's easier to just chat with anyone around the world.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's word of mouth with other watchmakers. Like maybe they'll reach out to one of their clients and say, hey, you should check this out.
Yeah.
I can see this coming down the pipe. So,
and do you think that's happening? Like, do you think that's
a
phenomenon?
Yeah.
Which is really nice. I mean, if that's happening, that would warm my old cynical heart. That's wonderful. Because I think the market's big enough. There's a lot more people interested in watches than there are good watches that are made, like particularly small artisanal watches being made. So
it's quite an interesting industry in that, like, especially for independents, it's hard to explain how you make sales.
Right, in what way?
Before I started, venturing into this, I went to the bank and looking into getting some funding, and they look at you like, well, how are you going to generate sales?
Right.
And you say to them, well, Instagram?
If I build it, they will come. That's right.
Yes,
essentially.
But they don't really understand how that makes any sense or how does that work. They want more numbers on it.
Yeah, business plan.
You can't research that kind of stuff either.
Sure.
Or it's difficult for them to have hard numbers on independence.
Well, I mean, it is a risky, but also as a maker, that must be, thankfully, I'm not a maker, so I don't know, that will never be a thing that I'll have to do. But at some point you have to just trust the process, right? Like if you're passionate, I guess it's you have to be crazy and passionate enough to actually do this thing.
Exactly.
Because
you kind of just have to follow through with it. Otherwise it's...
Yeah. Yeah.
No one's... The person that believes in you the most is yourself, and you know it's going to work. So,
yes, well, that's right. Yes, and you have to convey that commitment and the thing to the clients. Absolutely. Okay. So the launch was a couple of weeks ago, got some buzz. Do you get a sense of who the typical, and we use inverted commas, customer is for an Aaron Sorrell watches?
I through meeting a few clients when I was with John and even with Keaton, it's more people who appreciate something that's handmade that they know it's a lot of, how do I say it? It's like they can just see the passion. I mean, I hate using the word passion all the time, but that's what it is.
It's craziness, right? It's the application.
Yeah, sure, a little bit craziness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, but
are you getting a sense that like that your particular design at launch resonated with? Is it like a European style collector, Asian collector, pan global collector?
It felt very global.
Which is great. I mean,
I had lots of interest from the US and then Europe and Asian as well. I think because I tried to have a smaller case design,
right?
It definitely helps with the Asian market, I think.
Sure.
But I think it still comes down to passionate collectors and ones who see the value in hand finishing and just work to a higher level.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're onto that as well. I mean, I think passion is one. I think the passionate and educated collector is really the key. Yeah. And I think the educated collector is the thing, because then if you've got somebody who either appreciates what you do, who appreciates what you do, but also has gone through that process before, you know, they're less likely likely build time, what's possible, what's not possible. Like that kind of, some of those anxieties would have been dealt with before you get somebody harassing you every week or something.
I like what you said about educated, because it's usually like if I have to explain a lot of it, usually that you're not going to be a customer.
Yeah, that's interesting.
In the sense that, like, you probably already know about this type of work.
Yes. Yeah. If you have to justify the price,
most people aren't going from no watches or basic Rolex or something like that.
Very few
to
go from
a highly customized one-off piece.
Sure.
From a random person in the middle of Canada.
Sure, you dream of customers like that. But
yes, of course. But.
And if any of you are listening right now, you're very welcome. There is no snob factor here. I'm just solving that for you now. But yes, but you're right. Of course. Yeah.
I mean, I doubt a lot of people's first watch would be my watch.
Yes.
But that would be amazing.
I think it's really interesting. I mean, there is this, I mean, I've been sort of into independent watches for a little while now, let's say 8 years, 10 years, say ballpark. What I'm noticing more and more now is there are more people who are getting into indie watches, but they're going into the larger kind of marketable indie watches.
I don't really consider them independent anymore.
Well, at some point they do cross that bridge, don't you? Like, if we pick, F. Pigeon or something, like you sort of go, if somebody's buying an F. Pigeon watch, it's indie, but it's not really, in a sense that it's an established, it's a brand, it's a brand with a guaranteed deliverable where the name of the maker on the dial, slavering away, late into the night, hand beveling the thing. So I can see there's more and more of those people who are moving from, like, whether it's Patek or Rolex into Ajourn, because like it's a relatively safe jump and a safe landing. It's an expensive safe jump and an expensive safe landing. But that's not your customer almost, I would imagine, unless those people suddenly go, who's the next Ajourn?
I mean, people can appreciate both things in different ways,
of course,
right?
Of course. It's not a value statement on Ajourn or anyone else in that sort of matter. Yeah. I mean, you work towards that. That's the particular path that the F. Pigeon sort of took as a larger, more established presence. Whereas, at least at the moment, what you're doing is very much an artisanal one guy following his passion.
I kind of like that. I like having it small and just on my own.
Yeah.
Don't have to answer to anybody except my wife.
So you've got a direct line manager that you are answerable to, absolutely, as it should be, sort of thing. No, it's really cool. I mean, that's certainly what's really appealing to me, and certainly in that kind of the smaller one guy or two guys well, girls for that matter, doing the thing their way is hugely appealing. And the aesthetics of whatever they make might not be to me as an individual collector, but I will still do my best to spread the word about it to whoever I think is going to dig that kind of thing that they do. And that's what I mean. There is a huge potential market of potential buyers who would be interested, but it's the education bit that's missing, because there are cool things happening across the world at the moment. The access has never been higher. So what's the future like? So you've got the new watch outs, 29 of those are going to be made. Have you got a few orders on the go now?
Yeah, I've got some orders on go right now.
Oh, that's exciting. And that's awesome.
Yeah. And so I'll just keep working on those. But I mean, for the next about year or so before I start thinking about anything else.
Right.
But it's always there. I've already started designing another kind of square style movement.
Oh, very cool.
Which I hope would work.
Well, that's hope for all of them, right?
I just mean...
Sorry. No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
Who knows how long it'll take to get to that point, but...
Sure. So what's the exciting bit for you? Is it the design of the thing or is it the making of the thing? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Or is it the selling of the thing? I don't know.
No, definitely not the selling of the thing.
I threw that in just as like a litmus test. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. No, I would say it's the making for sure. Yeah. I mean, design, it's a longer process, I guess. In that,
that's really interesting. We should unpack
that. I mean, the making, you can see everything come to life,
right?
When you've polished a certain part or finished the snailing on a wheel or something like that, it really makes you feel good about what you're doing,
sure.
Whereas, like, the design is just a concept and an idea and a hope that you can get it to this stage,
yeah. No, I mean, it's really interesting, at least it's really interesting to me, because once again, there are two main groups of kind of makers, I think. On the one extreme of kind of bursting with designs, as if you look at, I don't know, Gerald Genta, for example. I know he's not a watchmaker, but full of designs, like the endless kind of nonstop drip of designs. And that's the exciting thing. The making, I always thought, and I could be wrong, was a less of an interesting thing. It had to be made well, but, you know, the design is really the thing. And there's an endless stream of designs. And then on the other hand, I don't know, you get somebody like, I know Roger Smith, for example, series two, like in series two, three, four, there's a few families, but then once they're designed, they put aside and you can tinker with the technical side. So it's the making that's the thing, it has to be made beautifully, but the design's taken care of itself. So I'm always interested, fall on that kind of spectrum. So
yeah, I think I'm a little bit more to the making side.
The making side, just bent over a lathe, polishing away. Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I hope people this will resonate with people that's really cool. That's what I want my maker to be, is just in a dark workshop in the middle of nowhere, fighting off bears and playing hockey on the weekend.
Plenty of bears up here. So.
Yeah, exactly. So with your watch, the 119C, what's the idea behind the name? Is there a...
The 119C?
Yeah.
Well, I decided to just name them after houses I've lived in.
Beautiful. Why not?
I tried to think of a crafty name and either the good ones were taken or it just didn't really resonate.
As good a reason as any.
So I feel like just some simple numbers are good enough for me.
Yeah. So have you moved enough to have enough names in the back pocket? Okay, good. So,
Me a few years. Otherwise, we'll just have to move, I guess.
What you do for your craft is what you do, right? You can say that conversation to the wife. Sorry, love, we've got to move.
we'll need a bigger shop, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Wow. Yeah. it's good. So,
it's pretty random.
I'm asking because everyone else will know. We'll ask. Yeah. I guess the advantage of that is probably easy to translate into other languages, right? You're not locked into, you don't have to worry about does this sound rude in another language? Like all that kind of branding stuff that you got to check. Exactly. All the main languages, make sure it doesn't mean something unfortunate.
For sure.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess sort of moving towards the last sort of question. So, you making the cases yourself, you mentioned. Like, what materials can you offer? Like, what can you do? What's possible?
For the first few pieces, I am just sticking with the stainless steel. But I have some titanium that I'd like to try.
Okay. That you could do in-house? Like, you can do in a workshop? Yeah. Okay. Wow.
And I have another material that I'm hoping to use, but I can't quite mention it yet.
Okay. All right. So. Yep. Unobtainium. Yep. Solid unobtainium. Yep.
Exactly.
Very good.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So steel.
I'm working on buckles right now. I haven't quite finished those, but those will be custom made.
Wow. You really are making everything. Wow.
Yeah. I really just wanted everything to be my own. So.
No, I mean, that's fantastic. And I'm sure there'll be people listening who will absolutely tick the boxes where they go, like, he's doing that, or he's even doing the buckle. Like, that could be the thing. How difficult is it to come up with a buckle that is unique enough? You don't have to tell us your buckle, but I don't know. I've never thought of a buckle.
There's a lot of designs out there, but I don't think everything's a challenge, of course, to make a design that hasn't been quite done yet.
I wonder that. So is the idea that you do a buckle that hasn't been done yet design-wise, or do you do a buckle because you think there's a problem with the way the current buckles work?
I think it's just putting your own spin on things.
Right.
I'm not here to reinvent the wheel on everything, so to speak.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
At least not at this point.
Sure.
I want something that's classic and elegant for this piece.
Yeah.
If I'm doing something a little more out of the box, then maybe I go with something a little more out of the box. But I think for this style, I want something a little more classic and elegant.
Yep.
That has probably been done before, but not everything's with my been spin done before, on it. Right? So,
I mean, having been done before, it's totally fine. Like, I mean, because I think clearly if people haven't seen your watches and they will look at your watches, there's definitely very unique features there. Like, just it's interesting in its own way. Absolutely no one can say, oh, this is just like like, there is definitely enough things. But no, I'm always sort of interested in when makers make things. The first question I was asking is, why did you make it? Because the trick is, yes, you can do it, but why is often the most interesting question. Yeah. And I think we're getting a sense of why, because we're definitely getting that from you. So yeah, that's very cool.
So it was kind of like the hands as well. Like, right now, I have these hands. I don't know if you've seen them.
Yeah.
And which is a pretty common design in the industry, but it's common because it's beautiful. I don't know.
And legible and all that.
It's easy to read and it looks really nice. So a lot of people go with it. Will it be my for sure hands all the time? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it's also difficult to design something that hasn't been done before. Like, say, made the, like, stop second, or the...
Oh, the Jeff
one that
Depp.
Stops at the
Jeff Depp.
So his, well, I don't know if it's a minute hand, it has a little...
Yeah, the minute jumping hand, the minute, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
The heroin spoon, yeah.
That's funny you say that. The freebase, same thing.
Yeah, the freebase spoon. Yeah, it's good. It's good. Well, it's good.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was unique. Like, they'll give him a thing.
Exactly. It's unique.
It is his thing. Yeah.
I don't know. It's probably not everyone's cup of tea, but.
Yes. No, you're right. But I think novelty for novelty's sake is not interesting, at least to me. Like, just making something different because you want to be completely different. It's not necessarily.
Anyone can do that.
Exactly. Like, you know, that on its own, it's not a...
Does it make sense and does it really...
It's not an additive feature. Like, it's not a bonus just to, I've made it because no one's made it. Okay. As long as it fits the overall, whatever it is you're trying to achieve, whether it's legibility or fits the rest of the design. It has to have sort of harmony, I guess is the word. Like, right? Yeah. Absolutely. So, but I think it's also like you're evolving your designs and your that's natural.
It kind of goes as you age and...
Yeah. Well, you still got a bit of time before that starts to happen.
Well, I'm not as young as I used to be.
None of us. Yeah, by the end of this conversation, we wouldn't. How old are you as well? We should actually. We probably 40 should have mentioned that
this year. Actually,
younger.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like your sign of maturity. Like you're cracking on to 40, you've launched your new watch.
Yeah.
By 50, global domination. Right? That's all just, it's all part of a staged strategy.
Well planned.
What does your wife think of this as a, you've started the brand? Like, does she, do you seem happier? Like, is she, like, how, the life of a watchmaker, I would imagine, is not, like, watchmakers are not the easiest people to live with, I would imagine.
Well, some aren't so enjoyable, okay. But I don't know. I feel I've kept a good balance in okay. life. So
okay. Yeah.
I'm like, yes, I'm very passionate, but I have a good work-life balance and know how to...
Amazing. Unplug.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's great.
Which I think is really important. If you're so focused on one thing only, you become a little bit crazy in one way.
Yep.
And you can't see a different kind of thing. And that's the same with like ideas and designs. Yeah. Those can 100%. Come out of like having conversations with people that don't have anything to do with watches.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I fully agree.
I try to balance a lot of my social life.
Yeah. Properly. So what else, what other hobbies, like what else occupies your time outside of watching?
Well, when it's frigid here in the winter, I do a lot of hockey.
Yeah. So that's like 11 months of the year kind of deal?
Yeah. Just yeah. And then golf. I'm very much into golf. So.
Wow.
That's, when I'm not playing hockey, I'm playing golf. So.
Now, those two require a different climate, I would have thought.
Very much. But,
right.
Yeah.
Right. You don't sort of skate to the golf, to the
range.
No,
but
right?
You can play hockey in the summer here. So. You could do both on the same day in the summer.
Rollerblades or something? Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, no, we just have ice rinks in the summer as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Jeez.
Global warming be damned.
Yep.
Oh, look, that's very cool. Like, I mean, I agree with you. I think having somebody who's like a savant of watchmaking but just lives in the watchmaking bubble does not necessarily make an excellent watchmaker, but also be a rounded person to then absorb ideas from whatever it is you need to do that.
Exactly.
And I guess the last kind of thing is, let's talk about, we're recording this just after Watches and Wonders have the trade show's kicked off. So it's finished, not kicked off. Do you see yourself at some point in the future rolling through and doing these kind of dog and pony shows across, or is it not a thing that you've thought about?
If it's necessary, yeah. But I like to meet clients and just people who like watches, so why not go to something like that?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm sort of,
even if
it's one
not entirely to make sales, it's
sure
just
of course
be part of
course.
It is sure very enjoyable.
Yeah Well, that's interesting. I mean, because I always think, how relevant, or probably not even how necessary, are those big fairs or those young makers making stuff?
Yeah. They have the independent part of it, did they not?
They do. They always do. Yeah, they always do. Yeah.
But I don't know if you had to be part of a club to be in that, or
I don't think you have to be like a member of the AHCI. Or, yeah. Like, I don't think you have to be a member.
Okay.
To go. Display. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't tend to interact with that formal side of the industry. But I guess it's one of those things.
I was interested about the one they were doing in Ireland.
Yes. Yeah. That's cool. That is cool. Well, yeah. There you go. Meet your old friends.
I was hoping they were going to do it again at the same time this year, because I'm going to be in Ireland at that time. Well, but I think they've changed it. Or
I just get John to just. I'm sure he can just go through his things. Just everyone just lines down. Get Dave Brailsford from Garrick to come down. He'll bring people along. Oh, that's really cool, man. Yeah. That's really cool.
I'm doing a little tour in Europe, actually, for a month.
Oh, very nice.
So hopefully meet a few clients and other watchmakers. Cool. And
do you want to talk about that? Do you want to maybe tell people where you're going to be? And
I'll be in Ireland in the middle of May, and then I will be in Hungary, Slovakia, Austria, Czech Republic.
Amazing.
And then Romania and Bulgaria.
Wow.
But
wow,
my wife and I really enjoy travel. So
sure,
that's more what the trip is for. But
yeah, yeah, but you could waste half an hour talking to somebody about watches. Sure.
Exactly.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. There's a couple of cool collectors like in Poland and
I think I'm supposed to meet one in Vienna.
Nice.
A guy to watch, I think.
Yeah, a guy to watch. Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, he's a good guy to watch. He's a good guy. And there's a few. The thing. Like, I always think the key to those things is like a couple of passionate local enthusiasts who'll know everybody in their surrounding countries, right?
Own little group chats.
Exactly. And you want to crack into that. And that's the key, is you want to crack into that. That's great. Oh, look, and that's awesome, man.
And with a watch like this in the middle of nowhere, it's really hard to get it into people's hands.
Sure, of course. Because
people want to see it.
Well, they do at some point.
It's hard to really convey your whole system through a photo.
That is true, very much so. But I think this is where the benefit of these kind of meetups or podcasts and things is very much that you talking about the thing tends to convey the passion, the commitment.
Yeah.
More than any photo, even a little video or whatever. It's actually more, particularly with these small artisanal things, it's all about the maker. The final product, I think, less important in some ways because it's going to look nice because the maker has slaved over it. It's going to come out good, hopefully. But, it's if somebody slaves over something for thousands of hours, they're not, particularly if it's the thing that they're passionate about, they're not going to send you crap at the end. It's guaranteed to be good. It's just making sure that you vibe with the maker.
It's art.
Yeah.
So, yes, it tells time or it might do certain functions, but
that's
essentially, if you're buying from an independent watchmaker, you're buying art.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're buying the time. So I always think of it as, you're buying art, but what you're actually buying is the life experience and the time, the lifetime that it took the maker to actually make it.
Yeah.
That's what I always think about. It doesn't matter what it looks like because that's subjective. And if
there's each piece from each person because you've looked at it and worked on it for months.
Yeah, absolutely. However long people buying your watch, essentially buying a bit of a small part of Wostep, a small part of John McGonigal, a small part of Andrea Estrella. You're buying the experience of the maker, which then connects to the other, which is the most magical thing. So that's really cool. So if anyone's listening to this, what's the best way for them to get in touch? What's the best way for them to talk to you about it?
The best way would be through Instagram or on the website, sarhorology.ca.
Yep. And Instagram.
Same thing.
Thing, just without the CA.
Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us, man. It's been a huge pleasure.
Yeah, it was excellent.
Hopefully not too painful on your end either.
I enjoyed myself.
That's half the battle. No, that's really good, man. No, it's always exciting to meet passionate makers. For me, that's the best part of this. It's always really exciting to meet somebody who's committed to this difficult thing, but doing it in their way. So it's really cool. So best of luck with it, and so exciting to watch you grow. And I'm sure we'll touch base again because we'll see you next one. Thanks so much for joining us.
Fifth Wrist is by the community for the community. We would love you to join the crew via our group chat on Slack. Email us at contact@fifthwrist.com and join the movement.